This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today we're joined by Kaylin Radcliffe of Loopio, currently running revenue operations at Loopio. Kaylin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I believe, I haven't checked this with you, Kaylin, before, but I believe you're part of the Vidyard Mafia, because we've had a number of Vidyard either employees or alumni on the show, and it seems like that company has been producing some incredible operations people.
We've had an amazing team, and I think they still do, so good place to get new leads from.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we should, do the whole podcast can just be Vidyard people or alumni.
Yeah.
It was Joe Galata, right, who was one of the leading lights.
He was. He actually was there before I joined.
Oh, cool.
So we never worked together, but him and I believe you had Jen Laurie on earlier.
Yes, we had Jen.
They worked together. So I got the benefit of the foundation he laid, but not the benefit of working with him.
For sure. Some say he's the godfather of revenue operations, but who knows? Anyway.
I don't know. Maybe.
We're not here to talk about Joe, we're here to talk about you. So what I would like to know, because I do see that you were in sales at one point.
Yep.
But then you spent a significant amount of time over the past few years in revenue set and sales operations. So could you tell me about the transition and how you got into operations?
Yeah. So like you said, I started off my career in ed tech sales. Early stage, smaller company, and just always found myself looking for efficiencies, processes, how could we scale that across new people, and actually kind of stayed in that sales capacity, and then went on maternity leave, and we were relocated to Chicago. The CEO of that ed tech company introduced me to one of his Harvard alum, who was Tracy Britt Kuhl, who is one of Warren Buffett's kind of proteges. And she was just taking CEO role at Pampered Chef at the time. And she kind of sold me on her vision for creating this small, scrappy team driven towards operational excellence. So I jumped ship on the ed tech company and decided to join her in kind of that quest. And that was my first foray into what is now RevOps, but more in an ops, non-SaaS capacity then.
Got it. And at that point, you didn't have like core operations experience, but the CEO you're working under saw your ability to improve the sales process.
Yeah, always looking at like, what was our win rate? You know, where were things falling apart in the funnel? How could we improve that? What were the processes, the frameworks, the systems? I was already doing those things in my own role and as new people joined the company. So kind of saw that I already had that interest and that curiosity.
Got it. So you're basically doing sales operations and sales at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So if we zoom in today at Loopio, how many sales and CS reps fall below or fall within revenue operations? And then how many ops people do you have supporting them?
So RevOps at Loopio is a team of four. We have the CRO, myself, and then our two team members, which is a systems, senior systems manager, and then a newly joined kind of RevOps specialist, generalist kind of role. And then we have about 30 people across like CX and sales and the SDR team that we're kind of working with.
Got it. So 30 across CX and sales. So that's a 4-30 ratio
from my marketing. We also have marketing. Yep.
And do you guys support marketing as well?
Yep.
Cool. So and then
that's a team of 15.
Got it. Makes sense. Yep. So that's about right. For my discussions on this, I like to look at the ratio between ops and actual reps. And that's about dead on, like 1 to 15 is like the average I've seen. So you're about there. Okay. And the current sales tech stack?
Sales. So obviously we are a Salesforce house, which I think most companies that I've worked with are. We're using Pardot on the lead side. We have Outreach. We're using Gong. We just bought CPQ. Those are kind of like the main tools that we're using there.
Got it. Yeah. And is CPQ a tool or is that just a name for a category?
So CPQ is like Salesforce's quoting.
Makes sense.
But kind of like an add-on that you either kind of need or have an inflection point where you want.
Got it. And now focusing out of the 30 people, how many are sales reps versus success?
It's about half and half.
Got it. So we've got 15 reps. Can you remember a time where you've done something that have made them, that has improved productivity significantly for those 15?
So when I joined, the team was selling into all markets, all verticals, just kind of haphazardly. So kind of one of my big initiatives right out of the gate was to segment the team into SMB, mid-market, and enterprise, and then understand what industries within those specific segments we were really seeing the most traction into to focus the team. And I think we've seen a lot of early wins coming out of that, just that focus.
I mean, that totally makes sense, right? Like if you have great case studies, you work really well with specific industries, then why would you not double down? Right. Were the marketing team, were they helpful in that exercise or did they already have like the niching down? Like how did that work with marketing?
So the VP of marketing joined around the same time that I did. So we kind of decided that he was going to focus on his team and kind of rebuilding from the ground up. And I was going to focus on the sales team right out of the gate. So we kind of decided to run separately on those things. So kind of jumped right into sales as the biggest area of impact and left marketing to reorg.
But then I assume you both focused on the same industry. If like once you said software companies is a good industry.
For sure. Yeah. So the demand side of marketing definitely just aligned to the segments and the industries that we picked based on the data that we ran. Because obviously you need to be all marching in the same direction.
Got it. And on that point regarding data, is your team responsible for the data quality in Salesforce?
For sure. Yeah.
So you manage, you make sure there's no duplicates. You make sure everything's perfect for the sales team.
Perfect. Yes.
At all times.
It actually exists. Yeah. I think, I mean, when you join RevOps or you start a RevOps team, it's not, is there data quality issues? Because there's always going to be. It's kind of how bad is it? Where are the skeletons? And then prioritizing what you need to fix first based on the impact of the business.
Got it. And is that the systems manager's core responsibility?
It is now. So I joined Loopio in June and kind of did a bunch of like organizational changes. And then she joined in late September to kind of build the data and the structures and the processes once we kind of knew what the business should be doing.
Got it. And so when you joined, were you the only person in RevOps?
Yes.
Alongside the CRO. And then you've recently hired these two guys.
Yep.
The guy for girls. Okay, awesome. Yep. Are we looking to hire any more roles into the RevOps team?
I don't know. It's kind of one of those departments where because our mandate is efficiency, I'm never going to want to hire ahead. But as soon as we start to see those needs or areas where we really understand that we could get a great ROI out of adding someone else, then I definitely will.
Sure. Can we talk about onboarding reps now? Do you have any best practices definitely. Or anything to share?
Yeah, so we've had we also introduced the sales enablement role, which we rolled into our senior director of sales. I think there's always a better synergy if those teams are one. And my big focus with him has been working on what is the time to first deal for a new rep. So getting somebody ramped as quickly as possible, because then they understand who we're selling to, the messaging generally. How to demo successfully. They've obviously wrapped their head and their hands around the tools and the processes that we're using. So that's kind of our first benchmark. And then how do we get that person or those people ramped to 100%? It's kind of the next milestone.
Got it. So that person,
the sales enablement person sits next to the sales director or with the sales director. He's not in the seat in your team.
Correct. Yep.
Cool. And then his job now is to reduce time to first deal. That's like the metric he's tracking. Cool.
Yep.
And have you been able to reduce that? And is there one thing that you have done that has impacted that?
Historically we had pretty patchy performance. We'd have a cohort that would start and they would do great and they would have, fairly strong consistency. And then we saw a period of time where our new reps just weren't performing for us. And we weren't getting to that place where it was consistent. So we introduced the sales enablement role, really kind of honed them in on time to first deal. And we've seen since then the three new reps that have joined all had a deal in their first month. Typically that was anywhere between 3 months to 6 months on the longest end. So we've seen some good early wins out of that.
Yeah, I bet the CRO and the sales director were happy with that.
Yep. And I think the big focus there was, do you have the pipeline to get you to that first deal? Do you understand what navigating a sale looks like at Loopio? So just kind of breaking it down to what are the two or three things? Because AEs are focusing on so many things, I think it can get overwhelming for them. So break it down to the three things that they need to be thinking about to get to that first deal.
Got it. Yep. Can we talk about sales forecasting? So is that your responsibility?
Yes.
And what is the process from going from getting the forecast from the reps to reporting to CRO or?
Yeah, so we kind of do it in two parts, which I've kind of always done in my career and found that it worked well. So I will go away and complete my own sales forecast with what I know about the business. So what are we entering the quarter with in terms of pipeline? Where is that pipeline in terms of stage? Because I can know my win rate by stage. What pipeline do we typically create and close in any given quarter? So what can I create and still see the fruits of in that quarter? And then I will come up with kind of what we call our top-down forecast. And then we use Salesforce forecasting for the reps and the managers. So we map where every deal is in the pipeline to a forecast category based on stage. And they can manually edit them if they disagree with them. But basically that presents us with our bottoms up. And then we just work together to understand what the gap is and how we get more proficient at forecasting with accuracy.
Got it. So you're actually producing two. There's your one and then there's the bottom-up one.
For sure. I think there's been a lot of value in understanding where we have performed and what the business has looked at and looked like. And then what are the reps saying? And where is that gap or that disconnect? Because usually you have a sales team and depending on the personality, I think the joke at Berkshire Hathaway was, forecasting tells you very little about your business and a lot about the people forecasting. So you either have super aggressive reps who are really bullish on their deals and their forecast is always way over their actuals, or the inverse of that, where you have reps who like to come in and kind of steal the show and overperform. So I think it tells you a lot about the people you're working with. So it's good to have both.
I really like that quote, by the way. And I totally agree. It's almost like at Ebster, we have this and we kind of know who is who. And so we apply almost a variable to
100%. This person. Yep. This person likes to sandbag and say that they're not going to do well. And then they like to kind of crush it. And that's their personality versus this person always says they're going to bring in $1 million and they bring in $10.
And you might have already mentioned this, but if you could only measure one sales metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
One sales metric for the rest of my career. I mean, other than ARR?
That's probably quite a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
If I were to say you weren't, if that's the only one you couldn't measure,
okay,
which would you choose?
I think I would probably look at the count of ops versus the sum of your pipeline. Because I think you can know a lot and the sum of your pipeline, the value of it can hide a lot of things that the count can't. So probably the count of opportunities you have open in any given period would be an important one.
Got it. Yeah, that totally makes sense because you could have two deals, but one really big versus. So that gives you a better idea of the health. Yeah. I thought, I mean, you could have said time to first deal, but I guess that's just not as crucial as understanding how many ops you have in the pipeline, right?
Yep. Cool. That tells me about hiring. That tells me about the business health. That tells me a lot of things that that time to first deal doesn't cover.
Sure. Yep. And then final question is, who in your career has educated you the most about sales operations?
I think everyone. I think I'm just one of those people that is constantly learning. I hope I never get to a place where I feel like I know the answer to most things. So I think the biggest value that I've gotten is just being that sponge and be willing to learn from everyone. You know, if you can learn something great from an SDR and take that and translate it into your job, do that. I also have an amazing network that I've kind of formed. You talked about some of them with the amazing people I worked with at Vidyard or in the past. And then I have some great, great mentors. So I think my advice would be find a network, surround yourself with other people in the space, not in the space, read a ton. There's great like podcasts and resources. I mean, you're doing a lot of great stuff. So I think just immerse yourself in that world and learn.
Is a really good answer. Thank you, Kaylin. Now, here are the things that I picked out. I mean, first of all, the quote about forecasting telling you a lot about the people, not the business, is super interesting. Yep. You and the VP of marketing coming in and segmenting by industry is obviously like, that's just fundamental, right? And it must have had a great impact. And then the other one I have written down here is, I mean, having one person just being responsible for this single metric, time to first deal, when you are onboarding a significant number, like that's also going to have a massive impact, right? If you can afford to have that sales enablement person, of course.
Sure. Yep.
But there we go, Kaylin. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.